Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. Dive into the mind of former NFL quarterback Clint Sterner.
I like a good time. I like to have a party.
I know you do.
It's Dirty's Daily.
All right, y'all, make sure y'all download that Odyssey app, A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download the Odyssey app, use that rewind feature. And C.J. Stroud was on in the 340 segment, and then D'Amico Ryans was on in the 240 segment. So a couple of really solid segments today from NRG Stadium. Those guys, Wednesday report, getting ready for this Indianapolis Colts game. Obviously looking back a bit on what was the Green Bay Packers game. Wednesday, it is a beautiful Wednesday, and usually that's kind of the day you slide on from Green Bay. You start getting to the Indianapolis matchup. You start talking about Wednesday practice, who did practice, who didn't practice, and what's going on there. But the Green Bay game unfolded in a way, unfortunately, in a negative light, where the Texans lost and they didn't play very well, particularly on the offensive side of the football. And so Wednesday rolls around and we're still ranting and raving about what the hell went on. And so I'm listening to my guys Payne and Pendergast this morning, and Seth is a guy that watches as much film as I do, obviously, another former player, other side of the football. Sometimes the differing of opinions coming from an offensive guy to a defensive guy kind of deal is really, really interesting. But this is, I think, the biggest challenge for D'Amico Ryans moving forward. And I think it is the most glaring issue that has started to rear its head on the game film. And you and I have talked about it in a certain way, but obviously Seth Payne has an Ivy League way of articulating things, where I've got an Arkansas way of articulating things at times. And I just thought the way in which Seth Payne couched this on Payne and Pendergast this morning was absolutely tremendous. Here's Seth Payne on, it's really a rant about the willingness to give up on plays and quit on plays and stand around. And boy, it's good. Here's Seth Payne on the Texans right now and what he sees going on.
Pendergast and Payne.
Those guys operate with zero pride. Like, they just, and it's a disease. They stand around. They watch CJ get hit. They watch CJ get roughed up on the sideline, and they're just standing there.
Yeah.
They quit in the middle of plays. They stand completely upright. Like, mm-hmm. it's systemic laziness,
yeah,
and softness. They're not. Like, they need to understand they are the weak spot on this team. You guys are not playing. You guys are stealing money at this point. You're all stealing.
Yeah.
You're thieves.
Yeah.
You're thieves.
Yeah.
You are stealing money.
It's systemic.
The issue, the topic at hand was Laremy Tunsil and the offensive line. C.J. Stroud this offseason had actually made a comment on a podcast, I believe, that was, Laremy Tunsil is a vet. He doesn't do anything extra, ultimately, is what he was saying. And that set Seth off into a rant. But it is the fact that CJ said that, the fact that we watch it happen consistently, the fact that Seth sees the same things that I'm seeing on the film, not just from Laremy Tunsil, from several guys, is the topic at hand here, right? And I think Seth hit the nail on the head. And the angle that I'll take with it is, I don't think it's just offensive line oriented. And this is a hard conversation to have about a 5-2 football team, right? So I know there's a lot of people out there going, what the hell are y'all talking about? Why are you so negative about a 5-2 football team? This is the reality of it, right? When you turn the film on, yes, there is a Laremy Tunsil willingness to quit that is blatantly obvious. The lack of physicality that I've always talked about is blatantly obvious.
You use the Q word. You said willingness to quit.
Yes, yes. I've talked over the last 2 weeks that, again, there's no better sign, or nobody that's doing it more right now than Dalton Schultz. No question. No doubt about it. Just shuffle. The ball snapped a little bit earlier than he thought, so he's not in the best position today. So he just stands there and looks at the sideline. doesn't get the block. He just turns and looks at the sideline just like a pouting, like, oh, man, what's going on now? Same thing happens across the offensive line. I mentioned yesterday that final drive on both sides of the football for the Texans. I mean, I watched Stephon Diggs run a motion that is designed to pull linebackers one direction and then run it back the other way. So your O-line hopefully gets some level of flow away from where you're running the football, jogging, just lazy, just no effort, no energy, quitting. And then the next play, Tank Dell, same exact thing. Literally not even getting beyond the tackle with a full-out sprint. Literally from the back angle on the coach's film, it has been idled down to damn near a jog by the time they hit the tackle box on the opposite side from where they're running. I say all that to say, one, it's not a maybe it's happening or this could be an issue. It's very clear that this is an issue. And whether it starts with Laremy Tunsil or it starts with Dalton Schultz or it's just sporadic guys that are doing it, it's not. The truth of the matter is it is part of this particular team's issue, particularly on the offensive side of the football, Ron. And the reality of it is that this is something that D'Amico Ryans has to get his arms around. This is something that D'Amico Ryans has to get a grip on. And this is something that, in my opinion, as I said a little earlier, is D'Amico Ryans can't laugh last week off. D'Amico Ryans can't minimize what happened last week and quote-unquote move on from it. And go back to practice. This needs to be in the pregame speech next week. You remember that feeling you had last week when you was getting your ass kicked? You remember that feeling when we were watching the film on Monday and you had to watch yourself play like dog mess?
Oh, my God.
You got an opportunity right now to go out and erase that. It needs to be front of mind moving forward. And I just think hearing Seth talk about it, seeing it myself, It's gone from an individual that may or may not go beyond just showing up and being talented and pass protecting.
So you saying you think this starts with Tunsil?
Oh, I think there's a really good chance that allowing Tunsil to do Tunsil things is contagious and becoming Tunsil a problem. Absolutely, absolutely.
No, it is. Like the stuff that you and Seth are describing are things that just aren't within the scope of what they've tried to build. Like those things are just not within the scope of, hey, you know, they are run everywhere. You know, no, don't make excuses. Get like have each other's back. Like that's one thing, you know, off of what you guys are saying. We're seeing a lot of things that aren't what D'Amico is, I think, trying to push across. And we're seeing a lot of different things from last year. Like, this is, like, D'Amico said it himself, and we played it yesterday, like, the whole Stephon Diggs prior to the game thing. That's not what he's trying to preach.
Right.
This here is what you and Seth have been describing is not what he's trying to preach and build, and what he built last year. And it is interesting. We're seeing kind of more and more of it. Not more and more, but we're seeing some elements of getting out of the whack of what it is that look like they've tried to build.
Well, yeah, look, I think I'm a firm believer in, like, the best teams typically. I mean, and I know there are anomalies where this isn't always the case, but your best players, your leaders are your best players, your hardest workers, formula you could put together to hopefully, you know, equal championships is again your leaders being your hardest working, most talented players, and that typically brings the best results. And like when your highest paid player, your most talented player, your most veteran player on the offensive side of the football is his reputation is your own quarterback going on podcast saying he's a vet and he doesn't do anything extra, like that's who you are. Like it's not, I'm not making anything up. It's just the reality of who he is. I think it's very difficult for D'Amico. In fact, I think it's the most difficult thing that, he has to do here in Houston is to allow that to happen day in, day out, week in, week out, and then try to keep it from seeping into the other players and the other positions on this football team. I think that's the most difficult thing that D'Amico Ryans has to do, because you just said it. Like, everything that Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans preach and are trying to build.
What they built last year. Everything they pushed for. What they built last year. What they drafted.
Laramie Tunsil is the exact opposite. And they have to allow that day in, day out. Not only allow it, hell, they rewarded it and paid it money. And now, you know, there's just... It appears to me on film that it's creeping through the offensive line. It's definitely creeping to Dalton Schultz. And the fear is that it goes out beyond that and it becomes a bigger problem. You win ball games, probably doesn't become a bigger problem that we talk about. You lose a couple games, you keep hitting some adversity here or there, it could become a big ass issue. That's Ryan Ugly. I'm Clint Sterner. You're listening to Sports Radio 610. Boys, The big move that I think it's a huge move. I don't know why it's not getting more run, but DeAndre Hopkins to the Kansas City Chiefs is a monster move, Ron. I'm interested. I know you're very aware of what the hell goes on in Kansas City and what is going on. I'm curious to know your take and your opinion of former Houston Texan DeAndre Hopkins leaving Tennessee, where he had to be miserable, and going to Kansas City, where he, very, very likely could make a deep playoff run and potentially win another Super Bowl, or win a Super Bowl for him.
You know, it's interesting. I don't know that the Chiefs have had this style of receiver. Mahomes, just like, he's not a, if you watch, there's not a lot of like 50-50 ball throwing.
Stuff. Yeah.
Right. So it'll be interesting to see how he kind of pairs with them. But I think, to me, it was a move they had to make. I mean, they're losing guys left and right. They've already lost Hollywood Brown before the season. Rashee Rice, those guys are likely out for the season. Maybe Hollywood Brown is a long shot to come back during the playoffs. But then Juju Smith-Schuster has a hamstring and he goes down. And they got another guy who's a second round pick, kind of like Mechie, but he can't catch, as a receiver, which is kind of important. Yes, so they had to make a move with where they are. And to me, I would just say that Andy Reid, in particular, their staff, and Patrick Mahomes, whatever the best there is that's left with 32-year-old DeAndre Hopkins, I'd be willing to bet that they're able to get close to it, if not whatever is the best out of him. And I mean, last year, if you look at it, this year he's got 15 catches, one touchdown, not a lot of production. But last year he was over 1,000 yards, 75 catches, 7 touchdowns, which last year would have by far led any receiver for the Chiefs, including Kelce, would have led across the board. So, with the Chiefs and Andy Reid and company, I would be more surprised if it didn't work out from a certain standpoint. He's not the three-time All-Pro that you're getting anymore,
right?
But that's not what they need.
Well, I'm here for it, man. I think that there's a lot of folks out there, and I don't have anybody in mind. I just know I remember having conversations about DeAndre Hopkins and the thought of that he's washed because he's really, I think a lot of it had to do with him no longer being a Texan, but a little bit older and not being able to do what he once could. Which is always going to be true because, he was, like you said, all pro here. But the thought that this guy can't still go out there and make big boy plays that changes games, I think is crazy. But now, you know, he goes from here, which, hell, it was dysfunctional when he was here to a certain degree. And then he goes to Arizona, and then he goes to the Tennessee Titans. He's working against a lot of things there in terms of winning ball games and producing, and I just think he's going to have the best supporting cast and the best ability to go put big numbers up in Kansas City. So the wash crew may be puckered up a bit right now to see him go play well in Kansas City.
Clinton, major football fans know a lot of these big games come down to you know, third and six, third and seven, third and eight. Can you keep drives alive in the red zone? I think the Chiefs have made a significant upgrade in that area.
Yeah.
When you got Kelce and him in the red zone, Kelce and him third and seven, third and eight to get those tough plays.
That's why, to me, Ron, I think stylistically, I think he's a great fit for Pat. Coming out of that air raid system that Pat was in, there's a lot of feel, there's a lot of spacing, the timing is less important, footwork is less important, and it's more about spacing and getting to the soft spot and quarterback hold the football until he gets there and then get it out kind of deal. I think he's very complex. I think he fits stylistically Pat. I think that he is very similar to how he plays the game as Travis Kelce, from a feel perspective, from a using his body perspective, from being able on the fly to ultimately just play backyard football sometimes with Pat. Like I think he doesn't. He's complimentary to Worthy. It's not like he's gonna take snaps away from that guy.
Doesn't force Worthy to have to play in a position more than he needs.
Yes, right, yeah, now. Man. I think this has got real legs, man. And the one thing about DeAndre Hopkins is he's never relied on speed to get open. He's never needed a bunch of separation to get catches and produce. And so, from a Father Time perspective, at some point it's going to jump on his back. But I think it's going to jump on his back a little bit slower than others, because he's not relying on young knees and 4.2 speed and all that. He's always been great while being contacted by DBs and defenders. So I just think there's a real chance. I hate it for the Texans when we play them, but I love it for the Kansas City Chiefs and their product of football. It's going to be fun to see what happens.
Yeah, if he remains healthy, it's
that's
an upgrade,
the key, right?
It's an upgrade. All right, Robert Horry, he joined us yesterday as the Rockets season gets started tonight. They'll take on the Hornets in the Toyota Center tonight. He had a bit of a prediction that he kind of snuck in there. And my thought to you as this season gets started, are those fair expectations? Is he jumping a little too far out, or are they fair? We'll let you hear what he had to say and react to that next.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, welcome back, as we will get to the Rockets as their season starts tonight. Their quest to get to the playoffs.
Hey, Houston fans, I am so happy.
You so rich, too. They're 185, baby. Their quest gets going tonight. And before we get there, though, hopefully we're talking about this tomorrow, celebrating a big W, but it is Thursday, and we will be back where we were last week. I hope that waitress is there. She cracks me up every time we're out there. Back at Buffalo Wild Wings, right off Tomball Parkway, right near Willowbrook Mall and the Willowbrook Plaza. We'll be there tomorrow for a little Thirsty Thursday, so come hang out with us. Have a good time. I'm sure plenty of prizes, plenty of things to hook folks up with. We had six things, multiple tickets to hook people up to the Texans game. Somebody got some tickets to the game on Sunday against the Colts last week. U of H tickets to face Utah. So a lot of things. And my man, he was really excited about the game he won from the Bud Light game. What was it like paper football or whatever that thing?
I'm trying to remember where we were last week.
Willowbrook.
Like, I don't remember any of this. None of this is ringing a bell.
You got up and walked and stood. You were up against us coming back from break. You were standing there looking at the looked like it was a box at a briefcase.
Oh, yeah. Okay, now I got it. Now it's, yep.
Came back. Good Lord, boy. It's been that bad.
When you said, I hope that waitress is there, I'm like, well, who's it from? Now I know which one. Yeah, the board game jogged my memory. Yes, now I got you.
But no, come on out. Have a good time with us. Remember our guy from, what's his name? His last name is his nickname and last name combined.
Spank.
Yeah, Spank.
Mike.
But he had a nickname that made Spank.
Spank.
Spank Nuts. Spank Balls or something.
No, I don't know about that.
His last name was like Balls or Nuts. Something like that. I forgot what Spank's last name, but it was something.
The boy that came from Lake Jackson?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, from Lake Jackson. Yeah, it's something nasty at the end. Yeah, it was a last name of which your nickname can't be Spank. Because it don't roll together. But come hang out with us tomorrow as we enjoy hanging out a little Thirsty Thursday. All right, we sat down yesterday with Robert Horry, former Houston Rocket, two-time champ here, seven-time champ overall. And he was talking about the Rockets a bit, and he said this in passing, which appeared to be an expectation coming from the champ. This is what Robert Horry had to say about this season and his expectations for the Rockets.
I think they'll be fine. I think they, you know, for me, looking at that scene, they're going to probably finish 7th or 8th in the West.
Oh, okay, so that's the playoffs. Okay. 7th or 8th in the West. Last year, they were 11th outside of the play-in. 7 or 8 would mean they would be in a play-in but would flirt with it. He seems to have them as a, I wouldn't say comfortable, but a back-end playoff team in the Western Conference. And listen, the West is I think you talked about this earlier about the SEC, and when you look at the SEC, and it's like the middle of the SEC.
Like, yeah, yeah.
You know, I think the Celtics are the best team in the league, and some would argue, I don't know, if Philly's completely healthy with Paul George added to the mix, they're there, and a lot of people like the Knicks. But it's just so many teams like in that middle to the bottom that the Rockets are competing with, to where 7 or 8, that's, you know, you feel like Denver is going to be really, really good. Dallas just made it to the finals last year. You would feel like those teams, OKC won the West last year. And then you got the Minnesotas who were good. You have the Suns who were good. And you got, you know, the Lakers and the Kings. These were all in the play. And you have the Warriors. 7 or 8. At 713-572-4610, those of you on YouTube and Twitch, does that feel right? A right expectation, or do you feel like Robert Horry is a little strong there with his expectation 7 or 8?
God, I hope it's right. Yeah. I mean, that's if you look at the standings last year, you're 7-8. You're 7-8 in the West were the Lakers and the Pelicans, and there was a 6-game difference between the Rockets last year and that 7 or 8. I would hope that they could improve 6 dubs with another year with Ime Udoka, with adding a few pieces, with another year experience for several guys, paying two of your pillars, if you will, that you're definitely going to build around. I don't think that's a stretch at all. That 7 or 8, it's not much of an improvement from where where they were last year. So why not? Yeah. I mean, the thing is, like you said, the West, when you look at the meat of the West, you know, the 4 through 8, 9, 10 is a pretty solid group. So you're going to jump some pretty solid teams to get to 7 or 8.
Yeah, but there's some sneaky teams behind that. You know, as you look at that, as you read that, would you say the Lakers and the Pelicans?
Lakers
were 7 and 8.
Pelicans, yeah.
And then the Kings and the Warriors were 9 and 10. And then the, like Champ Slice just texted, Phoenix, both L.A. teams, Sacramento, Golden State, and New Orleans not going to be better than us. I don't know that I can get with that. I don't know that I can get with the definitive. We'll see. There's got to be some guys taking some big steps. But like San Antonio is a sneaky team that lost a lot. But, you know,
yeah.
You get Wimby back, Chris Paul added to that group just within leadership, and that's a team that's better. Like the Grizzlies, that's sneaky. You know, with Ja Morant, when he's been healthy, they've been like a top 4 seed in the West, 2 seed in the West 2 years ago. They didn't have Ja Morant last year. That's a team that feels like it can shift. So to me, it was like if they get into the play-in, just with how strong that West is, if they get in the play-in, that to me is a big positive sign. But it's just a lot of teams that have more experience than them, and seem like that they're at least in that same space. If they get a 7 or 8 seed, that's big time to me, and that's a big step from going from the biggest turnaround to being 500.
Do you think that they're in a position to be really aggressive in terms of acquiring a big name, a game changer?
Yeah, I think they've got it. I think they have, you know, even outside of the two they just signed, I think they've got young pieces that could be attracted. that teams could be attracted or players could be attracted to and teams be attracted to. So I think they got young pieces, and depending how they play together, you could maybe lure some, because you know some of these, many of these players have, they have kind of a say-so on where they go. I think you could see players may wanting to come there if this thing gets off right. I think it's huge they get off to a big start. And I know they've got the Spurs in there twice in their first five. They got to win tonight. The Hornets, they just got to beat bad teams like that. And they've got the Mavericks in that front five. But I think they got to get off to a good start. But when I heard 7 or 8, like that's when you said that's where
a little rich for you, huh?
Well, just like you said last year, that's where AD, LeBron, and
I think it was actually Phoenix and LA. I think, is that right? Does that feel right to you? Either way it goes, it's in the Pelican, LA, Phoenix range right there, and it's only five games back from the Lakers.
Yeah, the Lakers were the 7 because they lost to the Nuggets, the 2 seed. So like that's like, are they better? Like, are they better than that Lakers team, and are they better than a lot of the teams there? Like I hear Champ saying about Phoenix, but I don't know if I'm ready to bury Booker and Durant.
Yeah,
that the Rockets,
especially in the context of a Rockets conversation.
Like when he says Kings, am I ready to say that De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis, that they're not as, you know, they're not as good as them, and they add DeRozan too. So we'll see. It'll be a fun season to watch. I'm gonna try to get down there and catch more games than I have, but it'll be a fun season to watch. But that's interesting. 7 or 8 seed. I know Brandon Scott, who's going to come up, do a little Texans report with us coming up next. I know he's been talking about this and ready for this. He said he's leaving right from the station to go check out the Rockets. But he's been running around. He's been at NRG. We heard him talking to D'Amico and C.J. Stroud. We'll hear from him, get a little bit of the news and notes on the new linebacker they added and Devin White, injury stuff, and the feel of today from Brandon Scott. That's coming up next.
Football in H-Town is on the rise.
I love D'Amico Ryan's, man. I tell you what.
H-Town, I'm back.
Our guy, B. Scott, has all the latest from the gridiron.
I don't see no bitches nowhere around here.
It's time for your weekly Texans report.
I ain't laying down for nobody.
On The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
That's right. It's that time. Brandon Scott joins us. B. Scott, who was out and about. He was at practice today, saw some returns to practice, and we'll get his thoughts on the injury stuff going on. Talked to C.J. Stroud, talked to D'Amico Ryans. We heard you. You even got a good question from D'Amico Ryans.
Never know how to feel about those. Never know how to feel. I don't really need validation on my question. Yeah. But sometimes I wonder if they say that because it was too soft of a question. Yeah, like if it's a good question to you, is it really a good question? I never know how to feel.
Easy. I thought it was a good question.
I did too, so I kind of let it ride.
Sounded good too, Chief.
I appreciate that.
Easy one.
Good I do question. Appreciate good that. Question. I go in there honest, man, trying to get real answers.
Thank you for setting me up with that one. But first, the move here is they add, and I'm going to ask you the same thing I asked Clint and the people. And now you may be able to kind of tie in a little bit more that you know with being around the building. But when you saw they signed Devin White, 26-year-old linebacker, formerly a Pro Bowler, multiple-time Pro Bowler, and was let go by the Eagles, but had great years. Hell, just last year was giving the Texans trouble when they played the Bucs. What was your thought process when you saw they made that move to get him in?
Well, it's kind of twofold, I would say, because on the one hand, if you just take Devin White in and of himself, like that's a reclamation project that would be worth kicking the tires on, even if everybody was fully healthy. Like if Christian Harris is out there balling out and Henry Toa is not concussed and he's out there doing his thing and Azeez Al-Shaair, like just if you want to make Devin White part of your linebacker depth or push back one of these dudes as one of your leading tacklers, not Azeez Al-Shaair, of course, but if it was Henry Toa or whatever the case may be, like that would work just in and of itself. Then you add on top of it the health issues that they've had at that position, then it makes you think, okay, reclamation project and somebody they actually might need. Like linebacker depth has been something we've been talking about for at least a week now, ever since Henry Toa went down. Him and Azeez go down at the same time. Christian Harris, that's been an issue all year. The way that they've been mum on that, the way that they don't really talk about it, doesn't really make you feel good about the situation. So on the one hand, I looked at it as hey, here's a guy who's been good in the league before, and he's just on the street. Doesn't cost you anything to go get him. Makes sense to go get him. And it's specifically a position of need. And I think it does kind of foreshadow some, I would say, some issues with Christian. I mean, we're in the eighth game. We're in week eight here, and Christian Harris not only is not out there, not practicing, and not a peep about when he might return. So I think that speaks for itself.
I love the thought. B. Scott, the crazy part is, I mean, I didn't realize he should be in his prime.
He should be 26 years old.
I didn't realize he was drafted in the 2019 draft. I don't know why, but like Devin White, just it seems like he's been around forever.
Yeah.
It seems like I thought he was 8-9 years in. I mean, this dude's been like, this is year 5 and he ain't played this year.
Yeah.
I understand there's been some injuries, but to think the dude physically should be in his prime right now. It's not crazy to think that a D'Amico Ryans could pull a Mario Edwards with a guy like Devin White, and he could end up playing some of his best ball under D'Amico Ryans in this system and being able to work with a guy like that on a day-to-day basis.
Well, I will point out, and Brooks, friend of the show, Brooks Cabana, who is now covering the Eagles out in Philadelphia, was actually making note of this, and he covered Devin White at LSU
crazy-ass Brooks.
Oh, yeah, Brooks is out there living good. But he pointed out it's not so much of Devin White being washed or not good anymore as much as it was he lost the competition to N'Kobe Dean, somebody that the Eagles invested, I believe, a third-round pick in.
Yep.
And we know that Howie Roseman and the Eagles organization has a fascination with those Georgia guys. They got at least three of them, maybe four of them on their defense right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, and rightfully so. The Texans have one too, right? Rightfully so. Georgia's been what it is. But it wasn't so much of Devin White not being good enough as much as I think, at least from the Eagles' standpoint, them investing in N'Kobe Dean and believing in N'Kobe Dean and that being a good player that just outplayed him in that competition. But that's not to say that if Christian Harris is injured or not the same whenever he does come back,
right,
or if a knee injury limits what we've seen so far from Azeez Al-Shaair, or you need depth around a Henry Toa-Toa, that a Devin White cannot feel that. I think he absolutely can, especially when you add that D'Amico Ryans dynamic to it as well.
Brandon Scott, who has been around the Texans facility today, and not just today, Monday, he's been around as well. We talked about it. This feels like, Brandon, this may be the lowest point almost. It feels like the fan base feels towards this Texans group under D'Amico Ryans after this week. I mean, even more than last year, but this feels like potentially the lowest point for the fan base towards the team. What was the vibe you were getting here midweek Wednesday as you're around the players, you see them at practice, you see them at the podium and around the facility? What was the vibe you were feeling from them? Because I found it interesting, CJ saying, I want y'all to be as hard. I want y'all to have like kind of the same energy on the offensive line if they do well next week that you're doing right now. What's the vibe you were feeling from this player?
I would say it's the lowest since the expectation change. Like, I almost look at last year in two parts. There's a point where they're exciting and they're up and coming. And I think, like, after that, let's call it that Bucks and Bengals stretch, those two games, those two back-to-back games, I feel like there was a shift in how they were viewed after that. And I think they lose to... I think they lose to Cleveland after that, and they lose to the Jets after that. But before that, I think the low points were losing to Bryce Young's Carolina Panthers and Desmond Ridder's Atlanta Falcons. But now there's a different feeling because the expectation has shifted. To your question, as far as the feeling, I did get the sense of, I don't know what accountability exactly looks like for them internally, but I did get the sense that there were some not so easy to difficult conversations that we're having to be had out there. Like, now who's having them? Who's leading them? What do those conversations exactly entail? I'm not 100% sure, but I did get the sense, at least from CJ, not as much from D'Amico, but at least from CJ, the way CJ Stroud answered questions, you know, having to deal with different guys, having to be a leader, having to be accountable, look each other in the mirror, look themselves in the mirror, look himself in the mirror, because there's a lot of talk about what the offensive line didn't do. Bobby Slowick's a punching bag every week. But CJ Stroud himself, to his credit, was like, hey, man, there are some areas where I can be better on top of that. So, and I think this is something that you've been talking about too, Ron, is like, you know, CJ kind of being able to skirt past a lot of the criticism that comes with the offense. So I got the sense that there was accountability without a great sense for what exactly it looks like. But I didn't get the sense that the sky...
It didn't feel different? It didn't feel different?
No, it didn't feel like the sky was falling, or they felt like, you know, like they had this tremendous opportunity to get away. Like, I even thought going into the game, it was a game that they could afford to lose. It's the Green Bay Packers. It's another contender. I think the big issue was the way that it looked. And I know this is something that Clint has talked about. Like, it wasn't just losing the game. It was the way that they the way that they looked and the fashion in which they lost it. Like, we evaluate how they play just as much as what the actual result is, win or loss. And I think that's the issue. But being in the locker room, like, just, you know, about an hour ago, or just an hour ago, you got C.J. Stroud, Joe Mixon, and Stephon Diggs cutting up at the locker, you know, not seeming like, you know, like it's the end of the world or anything. Yeah. Like, everything still seems fairly light, and I think that that's a reasonable thing.
Well, look, they should be. They're 5-2, and I think, like you there still should be able to cut up amongst each other. My big, like, I don't like and it's not that I don't like. It's just that at some point, there's going to have to be a shift in the way in which you answer the questions to the media. Right there, I mean, there has to be a shift in a sense of, hey, we realize that, yes, the two losses that we have this year happen to be against the two best teams that we played, and like that's ultimately the bar that we're gonna be, you know, gauged from, is how we play against those football teams.
Yeah,
that's the reality of the situation. Like, for me, I'm just like, it seems like the last three times we've seen them play a really good football team, going back to Baltimore last year in the playoffs, it's been unacceptable, embarrassing. Not just, man, that was like, it's been unacceptable, right? Yeah. I mean, and that, to me, that's the bar that at some point, like, everybody's got to start recognizing.
Yeah, well, that's kind of speaking to my question that I had to D'Amico Ryans, and if I could go back, I would have reworded it, because I looked at it as more so of, hey, how much of what you've seen that's wrong with the team is correctable, say, within 1 week, like from one game to the next, versus, hey, this is an issue, we need to just scrap this whole thing and just do something different. Yeah, he said it was all correct. I kind of wanted a little bit more of a focus on the back end of that question, but I would sort of rephrase it to look at it as like identity, or like, hey, what we're doing out there. How much, when we talk about looking yourself in the mirror and introspection that you got to do, how much of it is, hey, you know what? Who we thought we were, or who we set out to be, we ain't. So now who are we going to be? What's the adjustment to that? Like, not just a schematic adjustment, but a whole mentality and identity adjustment that you might have to make. And I'm not sure what that looks like. Yeah. But there are areas in this team that we've had enough of a sample size now to say, hey, they're not good at that. We've done this a lot on this show. Hey, they're not good at that. They should do this. We're not good at this. They should do that. So I'm interested to see what the adjustment is from game to game at this point.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's Brandon Scott. You can catch all his work at sportsradio610.com. Also, I am certain he and Adam Spillane, they not only have episodes out, but they're about to really get on it with the H-Town Hoops podcast.
Yeah, drop one today.
There you go. As the season starts, I know you're going to be heading there to catch the Rockets and the Hornets real quick. Not long. Rockets playoff team this year?
I got them. So on the H-Town Hoops podcast, which dropped today, I got them 43 wins, 9 seed. So that's play-in. But 40, that's my official prediction on the record. 43 wins, which is two more wins than they had last year.
Which is not good enough.
And good enough for a 9 seed. That's what I got.
All right. Coming up, a little 5 o'clock fire. The injury report, the official injury report is out. We will get you updated on that. There are a couple of guys to look at that did not practice. We'll get you ready for that. And, yes, the big news of the day in the football world was former Texan DeAndre Hopkins was traded to the Kansas City Chiefs. I just wonder where Texans fans are on that. Are you happy for DeAndre that he is playing for a contender, playing for a team that has attention? You happy for DeAndre Hopkins, a guy that you rooted for so much? I know Tony's ass better be the way she talked about it. I've got my DeAndre Hopkins jersey. So we'll continue rolling there. A little 5 o'clock fire that's coming up next.